And welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Well, it's the computer show. We have not done one of these in at least a couple of months. Tony Yang is here from Gig Computers. Tony started Gig in 1996 while studying computer science at SUNY Albany. The company began as a hobby and quickly blossomed into one of the largest PC retailers in the area. Tony has been managing networks for numerous companies and organizations, including this one, ranging from a few computers to many hundreds. He knows his stuff. Boy, I tell you what, he showed up early today and we had a great chat about so many things that I know so little about. It was amazing. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. If you have a computer question, we'd love to hear from you. You can also join us the new ways, so to speak. You can go to the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/voxpop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, you know, call-in shows, nice to have calls, 800-348-2551. Tony, nice to have you back.
Thanks, Ray. Good to be here again.
So last week, before we get to the calls, we'll talk briefly about this. Last week, the New York Times had some issues. They were down for something like 20 hours. And quoting NBC News here, Mark Franz, chief information officer of the New York Times, issued a statement saying the disruption was the result of a malicious external attack by the Syrian Electronic Army or someone trying very hard to be them. The Syrian Electronic Army, it's an online group, shadowy, if you will, supporting al-Assad. They took responsibility and... So, without giving away trade secrets or encouraging anyone, how do you do that? I mean, the New York Times has a significant budget in protecting against this stuff.
They do, and you know, it is so common these days to get one of these emails. So they, what these guys use is a phishing scheme.
So they call it spear phishing in this article.
Right.
What is that?
So, I think many computer users, including home users, have gotten emails where it seems like a legit email. It could be a bank email. It looks like a bank email anyways, that says your account is suspended, so you have to log on.
Yeah.
Or create a new user ID and password. Well, these emails are actually not from the bank lots of times. They're from places like the Syrian Electronic Army.
Right.
So when you click on that link that they sent you to actually reset your password, you're actually giving your legit password to the bank account or to various accounts that you might have out there to these guys. So they can see every keystroke that you're typing on your keyboard. They probably have recordings of your monitor and all the activities that you're doing on your computer. And that's how these user IDs and passwords get leaked out there. So at New York Times...
So somebody didn't follow the rules. Clearly, there are rules against this in every organization. We have them. Presumably, the New York Times has them. Somebody did something they shouldn't have done.
That's right. Somebody clicked on a link that they were unfamiliar with and typed in the user ID and password that led to this whole big blow up here.
The bad guys seem to be one step ahead of the good guys all the time. And so in your line of work, where you're constantly vigilant with all your clients against this stuff, and I'm sure there are more attacks than anyone even knows about here on this side of the firewall, you know, how do you keep up with the bad guys?
Yeah, unfortunately, most of it is a catch-up game. You know, you do the best that you can to prevent things from happening, but these hackers out there are producing new codes every day that our systems just can't catch. So once we know there's a problem out there, we can start the process of preventing it from happening again. But unfortunately, there is no 100% proof way of doing this. I mean, we've done a pretty good job so far. None of our larger clients have ever gotten hacked.
Yeah.
But
knocking wood.
You know, knocking wood. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Well, that's interesting. And, you know, with the interconnectedness of everything from airline, air traffic control to power grids to all infrastructure, mm-hmm. It seems to me, and I'm sure it seems to everyone in government, the next big war will feature disruptions that we can't even believe.
Yeah, I mean, it really already is there. I mean, we're at a point now where electronic warfare is the primary focus for lots of these groups out there, because they don't need an army of 3 million soldiers.
Right.
They just need this group of 10 well-educated geniuses.
With a bag of Cheetos and a couple of Mountain Dews.
Exactly. So this is an even scarier warfare than we've had in the past.
Very frightening. And now that we've frightened you all, we invite you to call 1-800-348-2551. Tony Yang is our guest. It's the Computer Show. Let's go to the phones. Nathan in Clarksburg, Massachusetts. You're first.
Oh, thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
So I'm looking to increase internet speeds in my home, both for downloading and gaming purposes, really. And I was wondering if you had any tips for that.
Nathan, what provider are you using currently at home?
Right now, we get our internet and phone and even a bit of our television through Verizon.
Through Verizon. Is it a DSL line or Fios?
I believe it's DSL.
A DSL, okay. Mm-hmm. So one of the issues with DSL is it's an older technology. Mm-hmm. You're limited to how much bandwidth you can get, depending on how far you are from the CO location. Mm-hmm. So on a typical DSL line, you will get about a meg and a half, maybe 3 megs.
Mm-hmm.
There really isn't a lot you can do to increase that, because that's the technical limitation on DSL.
So in other
lines.
Words, it fades at the further away you are from the hub?
That's right. So DSL lines can go up to about 5,000 feet from the central location, and the further you're out, the slower it's going to get.
Mm.
The best that you can get in DSL line is maybe about 7 megs, but I have not met anybody that actually have gotten that. I will recommend maybe looking into, if you can, get Time Warner Cable, for example, or one of these coax internet services.
So in other words, cable is more robust than a phone line?
Much faster, yeah.
If I may ask, is there anything specifically that Verizon provides that might an upgrade?
Well, Verizon has a new fiber line service, fiber optic service out there called Fios. Unfortunately, it's not available at everywhere that they provide service to. My home, for example, in the Latham area, we're fortunate we have Fios,
yeah.
So we can get that.
And that's a wide pipe, the fiber optic pipe?
Optic is amazing.
Really?
I mean, you can get 500 meg service now.
Wow.
On the fiber optic.
How fast do you really need to game? That's the question.
Hey, I say, as far as internet speed is concerned, the more the better.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, Nathan, I guess that's the way you go. 1-800-348-2551. Now, if I understand it, and I understand so little, but the cable companies that offer, you know, wideband connections through the cable, a lot of their backbone is actually fiber optic, too, correct?
That's right. The just about all the backbones these days are based on fiber optic. But on the front end is where the limitation comes in. So even though Verizon has this huge fiber optic network, but if you've got DSL lines at your house, you can't get more than the 1 or 3 meg service.
But theoretically, there's really not the same issue where the further away you are in a fiber optic, that doesn't matter, right? The distance on a fiber optic line?
If you can get fiber optic into your house, such as the Fios service, where it's purely fiber-based,
yep.
You can go out as far as you want, and you can get the same service as if you were sitting next to it.
Tony Yang is our guest. It's the Computer Show, 1-800-348-2551. Susan in Malta. Susan, you're on.
Oh, hi, Tony and Ray. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have a Toshiba laptop. I got it in 2008, and every now and then the letters A and N and sometimes some other letters don't work. We've replaced the keyboard a few times, and then it'll work for a while. Then A and N will stop working. Then we shut it down, and my husband takes out the battery, taps it around a few times, waits an hour, puts it back in, and then sometimes A and N will work again, but sometimes not. Have any? Is it time to give it up and get something new?
Yeah. You said that you have actually replaced the keyboard on the laptop several times already.
The keys.
Yes.
But not the keyboard. It's the underlying, just the keys themselves. Yes.
The whole keyboard.
Oh,
you did replace the whole keyboard. Okay.
Yeah.
So
yep.
If that's the case, I'm thinking that there might be a circuitry issue on the main board itself. In that case, it's probably not worth replacing, because laptops, you can buy a brand new one for a few hundred these days.
Yeah.
Right.
To replace that main board in there, it's going to cost you maybe even more with the labor that you have to pay somebody to do that. So
okay.
If you have replaced, I was thinking that the first thing you want to do is replace the keyboard. But if you have done it several times already, then it's probably time to give it up.
Oh.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
Sorry about that.
That's fine. Do you have any recommendations? I mean, all I do is, you know, some word processing, check email, pictures, music, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, just the normal everyday stuff that everybody that does at home. I tell people, I tell all my clients that, look, don't spend too much money on a computer, on a new computer or a new laptop, because a couple of years down the line,
right,
it's going to be old. You're going to want something else. So, so for home use, get something, I would say, no more than $1,000. If you're paying more than $1,000 for a home computer, just for the everyday stuff, you're probably not making the best choice, I'm thinking.
Hmm.
Right. Okay. And touch screens, I mean, are they... they're okay to get?
Touch screens are nice. The Windows 8 is designed for a touch screen,
mm-hmm,
computer.
Yep.
I would certainly look into that.
Okay.
I don't have one. I like to have one.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Well, thanks,
great,
Susan.
Well, thank you so much.
I appreciate it. You know, I had a desktop keyboard, nice one, wireless keyboard. One of my children poured Orange Crush in it.
Yeah,
and
happens.
I did everything I could to clean that thing out, and occasionally all the letters would work. Sometimes I'd hit an X and it would be a 9, and can't you just put those in distilled water and dry them out fully and have them work again?
No, unfortunately you can't. One of the things that does work is rubbing alcohol.
You know,
if that
won't affect the circuitry?
Well, if you can disassemble the entire keyboard apart and use alcohol to wipe it off, it does work most of the time. That's one of the things that we do.
Interesting. All right, well, let's take a break here, Zach the Engineer. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. It's Vox Pop. It's Tony Yang. It's The Computer Show. More on the way.
Support for WAMC comes from Quality Foreign Car Care, Boston Spa, New York. Sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche, QFCC.com. Washington County Tourism, announcing the Washington County Cheese Tour this Saturday, offering tastings, tours, and more, WashingtonNYCounty.com. Binniewater Ice and Springwater, Kingston. Pure Springwater, Coffee Service, and Mountain Valley Springwater delivered to homes and offices, local and family-owned, Binniewater.com. And University of Notre Dame Press, announcing local author James D. Redwood's Love Beneath the Napalm, stories about the enduring effects of the Vietnam War, now available, undpress.nd.edu.
One 800 348 2551 is the telephone number. Well, I've learned that if you put the alcohol on the keyboard, you might fix it. So bourbon is okay.
Rubbing alcohol.
Oh, rubbing. That's not as fun. Let's go back to the phones. James in Saratoga. James, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I am a computer consultant myself, and I come across situations quite often where people will forget their password in Windows, and they're always amazed by how easy it is for me to be able to get into their computer when I don't have their password. Most people think that if they lock their computer keyboard that it's completely safe and nobody's ever going to, as long as they don't know the password, they're not going to get into it. But
right.
I think we know better than that. So my question is, for my commercial clients that have sensitive information on their hard drives, is encryption another false security? I mean, when they encrypt their data on their hard drive, is it just a matter of time? Can somebody have tools that will break the encryption in no time, just like it's a false security about, you know, having a Windows password on your computer?
My view on this is, I think at some point, all types of encryption that we currently are using are going to get hacked. They're going to somebody's going to decrypt it. But I think we're a long, long time away from that. So if you have, you know, if you have real sensitive information that just can't get out, there are drives that you should probably know because you're in the industry. There are drives out there that has security built in right onto the drive itself. And there are also these thumb drives out there. So if somebody's interested in carrying data around, they have these thumb drives now, USB drives, that won't take your fingerprint. Without your fingerprint, that data is encrypted and nobody can crack it open. I mean, it's got 256-bit encryption or higher. Nobody that I know of has cracked that that code yet. But can it happen at some point? I think so. You know, there are no 100% ways of guaranteeing that.
Okay, so
So for the time being, encryption, even, you know, there are certain utilities that will double encrypt.
Right, right.
Triple encrypt something. So, you know, if somebody uses that type of method, it's safe to say for the time being anyway, for the next few years probably, that data is going to be pretty much safe.
As far as you know. Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
James, thanks a lot for the call. So, I mean, standard for personal use, sort of 128 encryption. 256, you say, is real tough to decrypt.
It's very, very tough to decrypt. Even 128 is pretty tough to decrypt. The standard now for at least web pages that you go on to, if you do banking, they use 1024-bit encryption, which is it's the fastest computer in the world today. It will take 1,000 years to crack that.
Okay. The ones that we know about.
The ones that we know about, that's right.
There's a really fast computer in a warehouse in Virginia that can do that right now.
And this computer could probably do it in a matter of, I don't know.
Interesting.
But, you know, it is possible. That's why I said there is no 100% proof way of doing it.
Right. Well, we're all in trouble. Wendy in New Paltz. Wendy, you're on with Tony Yang.
Hi, yes. I'm on a Apple Macintosh and iMac and running Tiger software, OS 10.6.8. And we'd like to update our software, first of all. And we would also, well, the reason we would like to update it is because we were thinking about doing the iCloud, or the cloud backup service, which is free.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to have updated software, or you can't use cloud. So my twofold question is: first of all, my computer's been—it's about 4 years old. It's been getting really slow. It takes almost 9 minutes to boot up now.
Whoa.
And
okay.
So it used to take 1 or 2 minutes. So I'm thinking that it's just so overloaded with information and photographs and things. And we're photographers, so we do a lot of pictures and
a lot of big files. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm thinking if we back up to cloud, first of all, is it going to help speed up my computer? Can I just get rid of a lot of stuff that I don't need, you know, access to daily? And also, the second question is, having it out there on the cloud just makes us feel kind of weird, like in terms of being photographers and selling our work. Can people, you know, are they going to be able to somehow hack into that and get a hold of our stuff, our files, and having things like personal tax files and Quicken and stuff like that?
Sure.
It just makes us a little bit uneasy. So we were wondering how secure cloud is, and also will it, you know, using that service, do you think it'll speed up the computer?
Okay. Let me address your second question first. As far as security is concerned, iCloud has not been compromised, as far as I know. Neither does any of the other online backup
services. So Carbonite and all the others.
Yeah, all the other ones. There's so many of them out there. And by the way, you don't have to use the Apple iCloud service. You could use Carbonite to back up your Apple data as well. So I think security is not a major concern at this point. The data that you send out is encrypted from end to end. And on their server, it's completely encrypted as well. So even their own people that works in their office can look at your data.
Oh, wow.
The file itself is encrypted.
So
I think, you know, I think you can relax on the security part. Now, as far as the actual PC itself is concerned, the Mac that you have, if you're taking 9 minutes to boot it up, I'm thinking that you might want to do a cleanup on that computer. There is no reason for a computer to take significantly more time than it did the first time you turned that on.
Okay.
So I would do a defrag on your hard drive first, and then maybe do a spyware cleanup and run a virus scan on it. It sounds like you got a lot of stuff that's loading in the background that you may not need. So if you get those things clear up, your computer should run significantly faster.
Okay, great. Is the Carbonite free, do you know?
Carbonite, the personal usage, it is free.
I think they have a free one. I ended up buying like a subscription, fatter one, but
I think they give you up to 5 gigs.
Yeah,
of space,
I forget, but
which is a pretty significant amount of space.
And it's fine with the Apple computers.
Yes, it works. It's what's called independent, platform independent, so you can use any computer.
And there are many other ones out there as well.
There are
I can't
many
remember
other
the
ones.
Names offhand, but there are several of them. So you do a little research on that, Wendy, and good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Tony Yang from Gig Computers in Albany is with us, and let's go to Jess in East Chatham. Jess.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about the wireless in my house. I've got DSL because it's the only option where I live, and I've got a wireless router hooked up to the modem. I just have the two devices connected by that standard, I think it's like a 3-foot Ethernet cable.
Okay.
And I'd like to separate the two devices into different areas of the house. Will I lose signal strength on the wireless if I hook those two devices up with like a 15-foot Ethernet cable?
You mean the Cat 5 or the Cat 6 or whatever you're using?
Right.
Yeah, Cat 5.
No, you will not lose any signal on the wireless router just by doing that. Now, keep in mind that if you're moving that wireless router away from your devices that you're using, then you could lose signal strength. But the cable itself, you can go up. Category 5 cables or Ethernet cables can go up to 328 feet. You will not lose any data integrity if you're within 328 feet or 100 meters.
Okay, that's awesome. And then even if I have then wired devices, because I've got 4 wired ports on the, even plugging those into the wireless will be fine.
You can go up to 328 feet.
Cool.
Awesome. Great.
Jess, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you. Bye.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 2:30 is the time. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Pierre in Westerlo. Hello.
Hi. Yeah. I've got a question about being out here in the boondocks.
Okay.
I don't have... the only access I have to the web is on my iPhone, and that's through Verizon, and it's sketchy because sometimes it's there and sometimes it disappears. It goes back and forth.
Yeah.
But also I was wondering what would be the best way to get access out here.
Okay.
I mean, could it be satellite or cable, if I could get cable?
Yeah, you're out in Westerlo. I know that's a tough area because we had a client out there many, many years ago that was asking the same question. Is Time Warner? Well, I'm thinking Time Warner is not available in your area.
I don't think so.
Okay, so I mean, you really have, as far as I can see, you maybe have two options here. One is satellite. Satellite tend to be slow.
What kind of bandwidth do you get on a satellite?
You can get up to about 1.5 megs coming down, but the upgoing speed is very, very slow. Now, a better option, if you can get it, is a company called Hudson Valley Wireless.
Uh-huh.
They are a local company here that provides wireless internet access. And what they do is they rent these towers all over the place. Actually, they manage and I think they own some of the towers that they're on. Some of our customers have had good luck with that. So you might want to look into
that. So is it microwave?
It is microwave-based, yes. It's just like a cell phone, essentially, but dedicated for internet. And I've heard that people have gotten as much as 6-10 megs out of that.
Interesting. And, of course, in Westerlo, you might have a good shot at the mountains.
From the Hildebergs.
Yeah.
So I would definitely check that out.
Hudson Valley Wireless.
That's right.
Interesting. Never heard of that one. Pierre, thanks.
Well, I'll look into it. Thank you very much.
Good luck. We appreciate it. Of course, also, if you're just running on 3G, it could be another provider, might have better signal. I've gone out in the mountains with different phones, and some work and some don't
right.
work, you know.
I mean, I think in general, Verizon is pretty good. But, I've been to places where Sprint works a lot better.
Yeah.
So it depends.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to the phone lines. Tom in Kingston. Tom, you're on.
Oh, hi. I'm in the market for a new laptop.
Okay.
And I heard you mention the touch screens a minute ago.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know if they work with graphic programs such as Photoshop. I have a tablet that plugs in that I can use with Photoshop.
Okay.
But I was wondering about the screen, because it would be really nice to you know, be able to follow a line on the screen, you know, with a pointer or with a finger or something, and have that you know, be recognized by Photoshop.
Right. The a touch screen computer isn't really any different than a normal computer, except that you can use your finger in place of the mouse. So anything that you can do with mouse, you can do that on touch screen. Now the only problem with that is, you know, your finger isn't as small as the mouse pointer, so you may not be able to click on these very very small areas and things like that. But it does work. You know, if you press the file menu, for example, with your mouse, you can do the same thing with your finger on a touchscreen computer. So essentially, your fingers are replacing the mouse that you're using.
So I mean, you know, one problem I see is, you know, if you have a computer mouse, occasionally it'll just go bad. When you're pressing constantly on an expensive screen, isn't it more likely that that thing is going to go bad and cost you some money to replace at some point?
You know, touch screens have been around for a long, long time. They're generally pretty reliable. Now, it really wasn't in mass production like it is today.
Yeah.
With the release of Windows 8, now it's a massive production.
Yeah.
So we have to wait and see how reliable these touch screens are going to be. But historically, they have been pretty reliable.
I would think a photo imaging program would be a little difficult to navigate in that way. But I guess you get used to it, Tom.
Well, one question I had is, do they work with any sort of stylus or something like that? Would it be a little narrower than my finger?
Yeah, Photoshop. I've worked with graphics design companies, they have used stylus. You can actually get one of these Wacom touchpads with a stylus on it that they use to do edits. And you know, we have clients, engineering firms and architectural firms that use those every day. So it does work.
Okay, Tom. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. It's our computer show. Tony Yang from Gig Computers is here, and we go to Bill in Great Barrington. Hi, Bill. You're on.
Well, hey. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm not real familiar with computers. I have probably a simple problem, but a little guidance would be great. I have an Apple laptop, the small white kind, and my two-year-old was banging on the keys and somehow managed to change my password, and now I can't use the computer at all because it won't let me log on. Is there any quick fix to that? I'm sure there is, but since you're on the radio and being so good to people, I thought I'd ask.
Okay. Now, did you set up multiple users on that computer?
Negative.
Okay, so yeah, you got a tough situation, because if you had multiple users on it, then you can log on as long as the user, another user is administrator on the computer, you can reset that password. Otherwise, you're going to probably need some professional help.
Oh, boy. And what would a professional do, Tony?
A professional would use...
Are you going to tell us what... You don't want to tell us, do you?
Well, we have software that can do stuff like that.
Okay.
And there are some tricks sometimes to do that as well.
But that sounds expensive.
If you bring it if you're close enough to our shop, we'll probably just take care of it for you.
I'll tell you what, we'll give you contact information for Tony at the end of the show. Okay, Bill?
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Have a good one. All right, 1-800-348-2551. Anne in Southbury Mills, you're on.
Hi, I'm sitting here with my computer, and I have a regular old desktop, and I don't know if anyone's had this problem before, but I can't get past it, and I'm wondering if you guys have seen this before.
Now, is this a Microsoft Windows computer? Or do you have Apple Mac? What type of computer is the what type of PC is it?
Oh, right, computer. Yeah, Gateway.
And
the screen says, one of your disks needs to be checked for consistency. You may cancel a disk check, and it's basically said this since I've been going on.
Okay.
I mean, it's basically prevented me from going anywhere.
So you've tried to escape out of that, but it just goes back to the same screen?
It won't let me go any further. It's just basically saying check disk is verifying indexes, and it says it's in stage 2 of 3, 52%, and it just stops right there and doesn't do anything more.
Yeah, that normally would be, you know, one of two things. One is you could have a physical corruption on the hard drive itself, which means you're going to have to replace the hard drive. The other thing is the second possibility would be the actual data files themselves are corrupted, which would
Something that got into my computer to mess it up?
No, you know, I think this is more of a wear and tear type of situation. It's the hard drive breaking down. To determine whether it's a software issue or hardware issue would take some time. Now, if that screen has been like that for, let's say, a day, how long has it been like that?
Yeah, for a couple of days. I just keep looking at it.
Okay.
And I'm like, oh, is this going to change? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds to me like, you know, if it's been that long, it's probably a physical damage on your hard drive.
Was it a hard drive failure? Or
hard drive?
Yeah, I don't even know what to do because it just says it just is permanently stuck on this screen. And
right.
I don't know if I should contact some other computer guy or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. You're in a situation where you're going to have to contact a computer place and get that drive replaced.
Now, is there a simple method of getting any important data off that hard drive once it's compromised?
Yeah, we do that all the time. The fact that it's actually reading some of the data because it's not telling
it's
you the
like
drive
it's
is
sick and it won't get better. I can't fix it. I want to fix
that's
it.
That's right.
I can't.
But we're going to be able to save some of the organs.
Oh, good. Oh, that's good.
So what we typically do at our shop is we'll take the drive out and put it on a working computer and just...
Yeah, I just don't know if it's worth
copy.
The money. So.
Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, I don't have much better news for you.
Oh,
and
I'm sorry. And we have to take a break. That's the other horrible news here to impart. Zach, play some music. We'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from Empire Exhibits and Displays, Albany, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive displays, and commercial casework for trade shows, events, museums, and corporate interiors. EmpireExhibits.com. Ashokan Center, Olive Bridge, New York. A classroom in the wild helping schools, organizations, and individuals reconnect with nature, history, and the arts. AshokanCenter.org. Mario's True Value Home Center, Valencia. Featuring a new kitchen and bath design center, offering Starmark cabinetry, Cambria, and more. True Value, start right, start here. Mario'sTrueValue.com. And Beacon Institute for Rivers and Estuaries, Clarkson University, offering a hybrid online Clarkson Master's in Engineering Management for Professionals beginning this month in Beacon and in Burlington, BIRE.org/engineering.
Did you know that the Fun Drive is coming? It's, I believe, Monday the 23rd of September it all kicks off, and that's pretty close. If you want to make the fun drive shorter, you want to get your pledge in now, we'd love you to feed the lockbox. It's on our website, wamc.org. You'll see a picture of the lockbox there, and you can make your secure online pledge. Everything counts on day one of the fun drive, which, we're at about 100,000 now. We get it up there in the next couple of weeks. We shorten the fun drive. So that's how you do that. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Tony Yang is our guest. It's a computer show. Before we get back to the calls, we'll take a couple here that have come in either via email or some of our, social media organs here. This is from Bill. It says, is there a good way to get rid of the huge number of very obscure foreign fonts on Windows 7? When you work in design, this is really a problem. I've read many comments on MS boards from system administrators complaining about this, and Microsoft only responds that they don't trust computer users, even administrators, to do what's necessary to get rid of them. So foreign fonts, Tony.
Foreign fonts.
Yes.
If you go into your control panel, there is a folder called fonts in there, and if you delete the fonts off there, those fonts will become unavailable to the entire computer. So I don't know if that's what you're referring to, Bill, but that's what
that's Windows 7?
Windows 7, Windows 8, this goes back to Windows 95, 98.
Oh, boy. Now you are going back. Here's another one from Pedro. I have heard about the 802.11 AC routers just coming out. How much better is the speed and quality from these?
Okay, so 802.11a is a 5.7 gigahertz bandwidth, and that will give you potentially up to, I believe, up to about 600 megs.
That's fast.
It is fast. Problem is the distance is very, very limited. The 802.11c, unfortunately, I don't have much information on that right now because we don't have that implemented at any of our clients' sites. But 802.11a is in wide usage and is actually recommended for multimedia applications because it's got much bigger bandwidth.
All right, and let's do one more here, and then we'll go back to the phones. This is from Laura, who asks, how important is it to have security applications on an Android phone, and what would you recommend for this purpose?
How important is it? I have an Android phone, and it's mostly not protected. I would certainly recommend that you at least put a password onto the phone. That way, in case you do drop it somewhere, somebody can just get into it and look at everything. The only way that they can get into that phone again is to reset it and lose all the data on there. So I would recommend minimally putting a password on the initial logon. Beyond that, I think it's a personal choice.
Now, if you were doing online banking on your mobile phone, is 3G inherently safer than a Wi-Fi wherever you may be?
That's a great question. The answer is no. You can be using a Wi-Fi connection, a 3G connection, or even the X1 connection or 4G. The encryption is the same on any of these platforms.
Okay.
And it is encrypted end-to-end.
Okay. Let's go back to the phone lines at 800-348-2551. David in Chatham, you're on. Hello, David. Are you still with us?
I'm here. Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, I caught the tail end of a question about the durability of a tablet. Prior to the introduction of the iPad and those kinds of tablets, there was another type of tablet, which was a full-functioned PC, had all the bells and whistles of a PC. And when you opened up the laptop and you had the screen would rotate 180 degrees, you'd flip it down, and then you had what today we would call a touch screen.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I used a Toshiba for 6 years, and then I ran out of space, replaced it with a Fujitsu, which I've had for 3 years. I use them for presentations, and I have not had the slightest bit of hardware difficulties whatsoever.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Usually use a stylus. Once in a blue moon, I'll use my finger, but generally it's stylus. I've had absolutely no problems whatsoever.
Yeah, those Fujitsu and Lifebooks are great.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, David, thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Let's go to James in Lennox. James, you're on.
Yes, sir. My question was about long-range Wi-Fi jacks. Are they legal?
What's a long-range Wi-Fi jack?
What's a jack?
Basically, I'm not sure if it's a hack tool or not, but you plug it in and you can just tap into anybody's signal, as long as it's not protected.
I don't get it.
I see. Okay.
Like Alpha sells a short range and a long range Wi-Fi.
I got you. Okay. It's not illegal, as far as I know, to tap into a open area Wi-Fi signal. So I don't want to say it and be held legally accountable.
Yes, please don't. Remember, it's not me. It's Tony Yang saying this. So go ahead.
But I believe that you can pick up any open Wi-Fi signal. It is if it's not encrypted, then it's public and you can tap into it.
All right, James, thank you very much. Let's go over to Mike in Saratoga. Mike, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about Time Warner being one of the main cable providers, but for instance, that provider, you can get one class of internet provided, but then you can pay more for a faster class. And
right.
Can you explain to me, are they just, does that mean they're not pushing out as much as they could and they're only going to do it if you pay more? I'm just curious how that works.
It's supply and demand, right? Time Warner, I think the default Roadrunner cable connection is a 15 meg down, about a meg up connection or a meg and a half up. You can go from there and get a 30 meg down 2 meg up, and then there's a 50 meg down, 5 meg up. So they have various packages that you can buy for more money.
So it's like buying a Porsche as opposed to a Yugo.
That's right.
The Porsche is going to go a little faster.
Yeah, that's right.
A lot faster.
So for like a normal family that watches some internet-based television and just does other email and other stuff, would we benefit from a higher class, or would it not really make sense?
If you're not doing a massive amount of downloads, you know, the basic 15 meg service, I think, is good enough for most households.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thanks for taking my call.
Appreciate it, Mike. So that brings me to another point about, you know, cable services and, I guess, other services. You get an X amount of bandwidth, you get X speed, but does that vary? Like, in other words, if I go on at 5 o'clock in the morning before everybody in my neighborhood gets up, will I be significantly faster than I will at 8 o'clock when everybody's up and on their computer?
Yes, at the 15 meg service, you know, if you get the basic service, it's not guaranteed to be 15.
Right.
It's up to 15.
Right.
So if you have the entire neighborhood on it at the same time, you may be slowing down to about a meg or 2 megs.
May slow down
so
a little bit. So
early in the morning will be the fastest.
Okay, fair enough. I try not to get up too early. Rusty in Brattleboro. Rusty, you're on.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I work as a full-time firefighter, and I get tasked with a lot of the computer stuff just because I'm able to work my way through it.
Mm-hmm.
We just got a new laptop, and it came with, like, the Microsoft Word 2013, Access 2013.
Sure.
Our reports that we do through Access. It's a self-created form.
Okay.
We fill in all the data.
Yeah.
With this new one, it's the first one that we have is 2013. When we try and print, it prints very small.
Hmm.
I talked to our IT guy, and he gave me a couple of, you know, ideas. And I think what it comes down to is 2013 has a default font, and it doesn't work with our form.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they suggested recreating the form in Access 2013, changing the font, and then we could go on. So a couple of questions. I looked this up online, and it kind of says the same thing from what I could find.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know of any other solutions to this problem, or have you heard of it before? And the other question is, if we do this in Access 2013, our older versions, are they going to be able to work with this report now that we've switched it over?
Right, right. You know, that's such a common problem out there in the corporate world, where things get updated, and then, you know, some users don't have the latest software, so they can't open the proper documents. In your case, if you create an Access database in 2013, I believe 2010 can read 2013 files, but anything prior to that will not be able to. So you may run into that problem.
Okay.
As far as your printer printing out the fonts that are smaller than what you used to, have you tried maybe just importing the font from the older computer to your new laptop? Because if you have the same exact font, I would expect it to come out the same exact format.
Mm.
I think the font that we had in our original forms was just a Times font.
Times New Roman?
Yep, and I know the 2013 has that.
Yeah, that's a pretty common font.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they have any issue with that. You know, I'd be interested in looking at something like that. Those are things that keeps me up at night. And I love that stuff. But yeah, that's interesting. I would I will maybe ask your IT people to take a look at it a little more. I mean, that's an unusual problem.
That's an annoying problem too.
Unfortunately, our IT guy said that he doesn't do hands-on with Access because he's not real familiar with it.
Yeah,
maybe you could troubleshoot with the company that does the software.
Yeah, that's the one thing I haven't gone into yet.
Yeah, it doesn't, you know, sound to me like it's an Access problem. This is more a formatting issue than the actual Access programming issue.
Right.
All right. Well, good luck, bud. Appreciate it very much. Let's go over to Diane in Saugerties. Diane.
Hi.
Hello.
I have a question about a website. I'm not sure if it's within your realm or not, but I have a small business I run from my home. We sell educational videos, and so we have previews of these videos on our website, and they're hosted on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And until yesterday, when I would watch, if I would go to my own website and watch a preview, goes 3 minutes, whatever, when it ends, the screen is there, and you could press play and watch it again. Yesterday, suddenly, it went to, like if you go to YouTube and watch a video, they give you six other somewhat related videos you might want to watch.
Right, yeah.
And that happened on my computer. Now, it didn't happen on my computer, my assistant's computer, and she's in the same room as me. I'm the same, you know, our computers are networked. It didn't happen on someone else's computer across town. It happened, I was using Mozilla Firefox, mm-hmm. and so then I closed that, and I went to Internet Explorer, mm-hmm. and I got the same thing.
Mm.
But it's not happening on other people's computers.
Mm. Fascinating. Tony?
Okay, so the issue is that you want these other links to show up on...
No.
Oh, you don't want
no,
them. It's
I
only
want
happening
to,
in your computer.
Right. I want them to just watch it and say, wow, that was great, and buy it, and not be tempted to buy something else from somebody else.
Right, okay.
You know?
So, the common cause for those for things like this is add-ons to your browser. So, for example, you know, Yahoo, for example, has a search add-on bar, a toolbar on the top. So when you install something like that in your computer, not specifically in your case, but you know, I'm just giving you a generalized idea about what it could possibly be. These toolbars, for example, when you bring up a page, page comes up, but then the toolbars add certain things to it, and that's how they make money. Is they will inject ads and other things like that onto your web page,
yeah.
So that you will click on it and maybe buy something. So it sounds to me like that may be what's happening on your computer. So you have a AdWord add-on at some point, or a toolbar,
sure.
some utility that's bringing in extra things that shouldn't be in there. So I would recommend doing a cleanup on the PC.
Or at absolute worst, just reinstall the browser, yes?
Reinstall the browser doesn't always take care of it sometimes.
Okay.
Use a free tool like Malwarebytes. You can download it for free and just do a general cleanup.
Okay, well, that's great. Now, we only have a minute or two left here, so let's get to a couple from the internet here, or email, I'm not sure. It doesn't say. But here's one from Pamela. I have an external hard drive, which I was using as a sort of backup device, storing copies of photos and documents on it. I can't get the computer to recognize it anymore. I've turned them on and off, unplugged and replugged the connecting cord. It's annoying, and I'd like to be able to use it.
Okay. Pam, I would do a couple of things to see if it's a bad drive. Hook that USB drive to another computer if you have it, or bring it over to a friend's house and plug it in and see if it works there. The other thing you can do is try a different USB port on your computer.
Ah.
You have no idea how many times we have customers complaining about that, and all they have to do is just unplug that and plug into a different USB jack on the same computer. Sometimes the drivers for the USB device on that particular USB jack gets clogged up, you know, for whatever cause. If you plug into a different jack, then it refreshes itself.
Oh, interesting.
And you can use it again.
Okay, that's great. Okay, here's one from somebody, and Angela in Hudson Valley, Orange County. All right, Tony, I have an eMac OS X at home. I also have a Kodak camera with the software loaded on my computer. When you connect the camera using its own USB, the software is supposed to open. It has suddenly stopped opening for the Kodak camera, but does open when I attach my Olympus with its own, not the same as Kodak, USB. Is there a chance the problem with the software not opening is a bad USB cord? Camera works fine otherwise, and I hate to have to get a totally new camera.
USB cords are universal. This sounds to me more like a software driver issue,
okay,
than an actual hardware issue.
All right. So
I will reinstall the driver, uninstall it, and reinstall it, and see if that would get it
now,
going.
Now, when you uninstall a driver, are there still remnants in the registry?
There are, unfortunately, lots of times that happens. And if you're in that situation, you're probably going to need some professional help.
Okay, there's no registry cleaner that you would say is okay?
Yes, please don't use registry cleaners.
Okay, all right. We'll get into that next
really,
show.
Yeah, really mess things up.
All right, here's one from Ann, and this will have to be it. I use my Norton Internet Security, also Malwarebytes anti-malware. Do I need to use something else to keep my computer safe from viruses and malware? 30 seconds, Tony, go.
Okay, get the latest version of Symantec and get the latest version of Malwarebytes. You're in good shape.
Okay, but as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, we're always a couple of steps behind the bad guys.
That's right.
So in the end, you're really toast.
There really isn't anything you can do about that, unfortunately.
Tony, what's your contact information?
Our company phone number is 518-438-2444. And if you come in and have us do work for you and you mention that you're a listener on WMC Radio, we'll give you a huge discount.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'll remember that. To Tony Yang, it's been a pleasure having you here, my friend, and it's nice to have all the calls. Thanks to everybody who called in. Sorry if we didn't make it, but we'll get you next time. Underwriting support comes from the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, working to permanently preserve the natural, scenic, and recreational resources of Lake George, hiking guides, events, and more, lglc.org. Curtis Lumber, providing kitchens, baths, doors, windows, paint, flooring, and more since 1890, with 21 locations in New York and northern Vermont, curtislumber.com. And Dan Smalls presents announcing the Black Crows at Brewery Omegang, Cooperstown, New York, tomorrow. Gates open at 5 p.m., DanSmallsPresents.com. Thanks again for listening to Vox Pop. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our intrepid engineer. Your phone calls were answered by Colleen O'Connell. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. Thanks again to Tony Yang of Gig Computers. I'm Ray Graff. Stay tuned now for a news update.